mountains of Samaria to the north of Israel. Baal was the supposed god of rain, but God put an end to that ridiculous notion. He controlled the rain, and neither Baal nor Moloch, the local god of death, could prevent the ruin that was spreading throughout the land. Another drought had reached even Elijah, God's man. How far could God go to make this point? Was Elijah to suffer the effect of his own prophecy, the righteous and the unrighteous? But once again, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. If Hide had sounded bad, his next set of instructions were about as bad as they could get. Go at once to the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. To you and me, this might have sounded like a welcome change, a little conversation, companionship, a loaf of fresh, unbaked bread, and maybe, just maybe, there might be a mattress, a cave on which to rest his weary body. Sounding good at all to Elijah. First of all, God told him to go to Sidon, a foreign land whose inhabitants worship the foreign gods, the home of Jezebel and her Baal, no less, the very god whom Yahweh was punishing right now. It was as if Elijah was being sent right back into this hornet's nest. Second of all, he was being sent to a widow. As a woman without the protection of a man, she would have been the worst of the poor and the lowest of the low in ancient Greek culture. What was Yahweh thinking? Must God's obedient servant go scrounging for scraps like a common beggar? And even if this widow had things to help him, why would she want to? He was a foreigner at best and at worst, or an enemy, the spokesman of her accuser. But, bless him, he went. He obeyed. And sure enough, there was a widow gathering sticks. As if to test the waters, Elijah asked her a little drink of water. And bless her, she went. Encouraged by this, Elijah pressed in a little bit and said, "Can I have a loaf of bread as well?" What must this woman be thinking? We know from her next statement that she was a desperate woman on the edge of death and the wasteland of her own existence. "I sure raise the wonder about all this," she replied. "I don't have any bread. Only a handful of flour in a jar and full of olive oil in a jug. And now I need sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and then die." We know from her culture that her only recognized redeeming quality would have been the fact that she had a son, and even that was in jeopardy. As a parent, she would have been weighed down by the awareness of her complete inability to provide for herself and her child. As a mother, she likely considered it her fault, her failure, her curse. She was weary, exhausted, just trying to stay alive, and she had reached the end of her rope. She was going to prepare this last little meal, wrap her arms around her child, the only person in the world who loves her, and die. But what if this phrase, "as surely as the Lord your God lives"? The Lord your God lives. What did she mean by that? Was it a pointed, angry accusation against Yahweh who lives but brought so much death to everyone else? Was it sarcastic? Could she see that Elijah the prophet was in about as dire straits as she was? Or was there some kernel of hope that perhaps the strange meeting at the town gate with Yahweh's man could change her fortune? It's likely some combination of all of these, because when Elijah first told her not to fear, and then told her to take her meager meal and serve it to him instead, she did. When he spoke the word of the Lord and told her that she would have enough, she believed. Brought up this very same widow and said to me, "What will you have is enough."
Mm-hmm.